Hi everyone, welcome to Desi Dreamers, a brand new podcast which will transport you into the aspirational mindscapes of British South Asian trailblazers and visionaries. I want to go past a singular definition of South Asians, where Tamils, Punjabis, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis and so many more are perceived as the same type of ethnic identity. By talking to inspiring British Asian trailblazers, I want to create a vivid tapestry of the South Asian experience, including generations of dreams deferred, obstacles overcome, and boundaries transcended through a spirit of determination. I also want to build a community of listeners, young British Asians like me who want to learn from trailblazing role models from the diaspora. In this episode, I'll be talking to Madhusha Saktidas. Madhusha is a talented photographer and visual artist whose work beautifully captures the richness and complexity of South Asian culture. Through her lens, she explores themes of identity, heritage, and the immigrant experience. Her photography has been featured in prestigious publications and exhibitions, which has allowed her to challenge stereotypes and celebrate the diversity within the South Asian diaspora. I'm so excited to dive into her creative journey, discussing how her Tamil Sri Lankan roots have influenced her artistic vision, and how she's using her art to bridge cultural gaps and promote understanding. So join me as we welcome Madhusha Saktidas to Desi Dreamers. And that's actually, we've gone straight in there, but let me do a little bit of an introduction as well. So
yeah, let me do that.
So hi, Madhusha. Welcome to Desi Dreamers. How are you and what's been happening in your life this week?
I'm good. How are you? How's everything?
I'm good. Wow. I'm busy, but good.
Glad to hear it. June was a hectic, busy month. A lot of projects come through, had a really exciting shoot towards the end of the month with a really, really lovely client. And July is also very blessed to be able to say July is also looking booked and busy. I think though the next 2 weeks, I'm like purposely kind of trying to like take a chill and like have admin weeks because you with post-production, editing does take time.
That fully makes sense. And I'm really excited to see the work that you do over the next couple of months. I'm excited to see it. And talking about your work, the first questions I wanted to ask you about your visual storytelling and your representation of your culture in your work. So as you know, as I've talked to you previously, I first came across your work through the Pioneers series that you did with the Royal Museums of Greenwich, the Maritime Museum. So I just wanted to ask if you could describe that series a little bit for the listeners.
I actually worked alongside this incredible platform called Common Ground, mm-hmm. founded by Mahala Ford, who's also founded Friday Sari Project. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of conceptualizing and building the project and asked me to come on board to it and mm-hmm. asked me actually to be one of the photographers. And she pitched the idea and I thought it was incredible that she was like, I want to highlight South Asian creativity within the industry. And also like also just in a different way. It's not just about people being creatives in the traditional sense of like being photographers or fine artists or this or that. It's more like people who are literally breaking boundaries. Like some of the people mm-hmm. we had on board were chefs. Some of them were fashion designers, jewelry designers, DJs, all dancers. Mm-hmm. It was like a massive array of different versions of creativity. And that's what was really beautiful. And that's why I was like, yes, 100% would love to be a part of it. But then I think the whole idea of it really excited me. And I actually was like, put myself forward. And I was like, mm-hmm. I want to help produce it and help find the talent and the other photographers we also used who shot parts of the project as well. Mm-hmm. And it was a really special project because I remember being in like uni mm-hmm. and when you do something creative, I think the way, I don't know how it's, if it's changed now, but when I was doing it, it's very structured on having references and mm-hmm. first-hand references and things that you can use from exhibitions as your references. And I remember I really, really struggled in uni to have that kind of thing. So, and I remember just thinking like, I would love to have like something, some sort of project that actually revolves around something I can relate to, mm-hmm. but I'm really struggling to find that. And mm-hmm. when this opportunity came about, it just reminded me of that time. And I was like, it's kind of wild to have wanted something like this a couple of years back and now to kind of be a part of it.
Yeah.
And it was like the most beautiful thing about it. But also there was so many people I got to like bring. It was a really, for me, it was a really amazing way to bring together some creatives that I actually knew of, as well as meet some new people that I had seen, as well as some completely new people I didn't know of. Mm-hmm. And it was such a great way to expand our network, but also a great way for everyone else to meet each other mm-hmm. as well. I think that was like the most beautiful part of the project, but also simple as it was the fact that we were highlighting so many different experiences within South Asian creativity. And I think the biggest hope with that project, with this project, is that the younger like South Asian creatives who are maybe just about breaking in, or who are starting uni, who are at like a different stage or whatever, see this project and feel a bit inspired.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like creating those things we didn't have, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I was about to say, even what you said about kind of bringing together different creatives, I think having a community in a space like this is so important, and it's so hard to come by, just because a lot of what you're doing and a lot of what the other creatives that you brought together in that series were doing was the first of its kind, or at least something that hadn't really been seen before in the mainstream kind of media or culture. So it's hard to kind of trailblaze and do something different, but also have a community and support each other in doing that, because you are having to do a lot of that for the first time, or in some sense alone. So to be able to kind of see similarities with each other and bring each other together was so powerful. And then for someone like me and other kind of young people seeing that and seeing that there are those creative opportunities out there was super powerful. So that was really amazing. Really appreciated that work as well.
I'm glad to hear it.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to ask in follow-up to that, what sort of challenges do you think you faced as a woman of colour in the photography industry, and how have you overcome them? Kind of give us some advice, some tips.
Oh, as a woman of colour, I think in terms of just the industry itself,
mm-hmm.
like as most creatives that I know, you start like when you break into industry, you kind of start as like steps, and you start off with assisting. I started doing a mix of things like production, all sorts of things. And it was very quick to notice it is very much a white dominated industry.
Mm.
And I'd only really been on a handful of sets where they really genuinely cared about diversity because of their own personal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But like, this is like a handful, like literally one handful of shoots that it felt like they cared about that, versus the amount of others that I have been on. And it's a bit frustrating. It gets frustrating because it just feels like it's... And when you then go on the shoots where... Especially when you then go on the shoots where you're with people who can actually understand you a bit more, understand your experience, it does make a massive difference. And it's when you have both of those experiences, you realise how different it is, because these are people you can relate to. And that makes a change. It makes you feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. But also it's a great way, like at the end of the day, especially when I was like starting out, being in an environment like that was really great for me, because I could share my experience and share my concerns with people who had more experience than me, but also understood.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very rare occasions. And I think what was very frustrating, I literally just had a conversation with someone earlier about this, and I think what was really frustrating is, especially like since the Black Lives Matter movement and George Floyd, I feel like there has been this surge of like wanting to put more people of colour, especially like black people, in front of the camera, right? But where, and you are seeing that in ad campaigns. Mm-hmm. But then my only issue is that I think, where is that diversity behind the team?
That's
the thing, like the lack of authenticity then, like genuineness of it, it's very questionable to me, because I think the biggest things are like, if you're going to do something like that, I think it needs to reflect, if you're trying to make a change and like, oh, because you want your ad campaigns to be more diverse and representative, great, cool, then I think the team behind it should also be that as well. No, I think it's super super important to have a diverse team of creatives also building the campaigns as well, because It just comes across more genuine that way. But also, like, if you're going to do that and like showcase people of colour in front of the camera and claim to care about it and want to make a difference in the industry, then reflect that within your team. That's like my biggest thing. And I think that's why having been on set so many times and seeing that, I think that's why my biggest thing has been that when I do my personal projects, it's always like people of colour.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, if I want to... For me, it's more like, if I believe that that should be the change within the industry, I feel like I've got to be doing that myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's like almost like kind of like a balancing act. Because then the thing is also like, people who said to me, and it's completely true, where like with diversity and things like that, I think with a set, it shouldn't always just all be people of colour. It should be a mix, right? Otherwise, we're just doing what they're doing to us. And I didn't disagree with that. I think that is somewhat true. But for me, it's more like, when you then go on set and you see majority of time, all the sets you go on are so like white dominated, it just gets a bit frustrating.
Yeah, I totally get that.
It's a big conversation, I think. Like, it's a big I think there's a lot that needs to be talked around on how to approach such things.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, kind of linking to that as well, is the idea that in those environments, you're looking to make your mark in a way. You're looking to display your culture or kind of be that important voice of representation. But it's a burden that's quite difficult to feel like you've accurately story told and represented everything that you need to.
This is the other thing. I think there's also a lot within that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think when people see a lot of my work, they see me as someone who's really likes to represent our culture. And I'm super proud of that. And I'm not like sad that I'm seen in that way at all or anything like that. But then there are some creatives, and I think it's completely true, where they don't want to just be seen because they're South Asian. They have to make work about South Asians, which is mm-hmm. completely fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should be given the opportunity to be like, well, no, the way that a white person can make work like that, I can also make work like that too.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe in a better style, it's a bit different, but mm-hmm. I shouldn't be assumed to make work in a certain way. Whereas for me, and I completely agree with that, whereas for me, it's more like I wanted to just explore my culture. I explore what feels right in the moment. And hence why I've done a lot of projects really revolving around my culture. I did projects, a lot of started off for me, really. Like mm-hmm. I was just trying to figure out where I stood with my culture
mm-hmm.
and who I am, identity as a Tamil woman and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of just expanded. It's not something that I'm growing out of, but mm-hmm. it's just, there's all sorts of things I want to explore.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And kind of, again, linking to that, do you think in the photography industry more widely, we talked about some of the challenges that you might have faced, but are there avenues, places, moments or people that have helped you feel more at home in this industry? Moments where you thought, I can kind of see myself here and be my true kind of identity and also pursue my work?
I would say doing the Pioneers Project, mm-hmm. meeting all those creatives, because some of these people are people I've either actually been friends with quite a while or people I've worked with before, people who understand my experience and understand my perspective, despite them maybe doing something creatively different to me,
mm-hmm.
they are still a community of people that completely understand my experiences. And also just some of these people have had more experience than me, who have been in the industry or the creative industry for a lot longer than I have.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been people that I can go to. Like one of the people I shot for the project was actually my old boss. And I was like, I really wanted her in it because of the experience that she had within industry. She'd been in industry for more than, I think, like 20 years now, mm-hmm. I think I'm kind of guessing that. But she started off in industry where it was really not diverse and there was not really a conversation about that. And she then started her own agency to change that, and it's currently then started a new creative agency that's very focused on production, that focuses on these things about making changes in the industry and making it more diverse, and not just in a way where it's about people of color,
mm-hmm.
but also disabilities and being from working class backgrounds. And I think that's why it was so important for me to include her, because it's just, there was a lot that I could relate to her, and like mm-hmm. to have someone, this was like my first like grad job as well when I worked with her,
mm-hmm.
to then get into a job where I was already thinking it's probably gonna be a really white dominated team,
mm-hmm.
to have a boss who could actually understand me,
yeah.
and my experiences and share advice, which was so valuable,
mm-hmm.
beyond just work and actually just sharing those experiences. It was great. It was amazing. And I think I'm very fortunate to have that, because I don't think many people have had that before.
Mm-hmm. What's your boss's name? Let's just give them a shout out.
Oh, her name's Sachini, but I just really, oh God, I don't include this, but I can't say her surname for the life of me.
okay.
But it's Sachini. She's on the Pioneers Project. So okay. Maybe if you do a video thing,
yeah.
do a flash of her.
I was going to say, I will drop the link, description, you know, all the social media stuff. We will look at the Pioneers Project for sure. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about your visual storytelling and representation, and that's obviously a very key part of your work. But let's just rewind a little bit and talk about artistic roots and cultural identity, which is kind of what I really want to unpack with this podcast series. Can you tell us a little bit about how your upbringing and how your Tamil Sri Lankan background has shaped your artistic perspective?
It's shaped in a really important and a big way. I think especially with given like the history with the Sri Lankan Civil War and with the Tamil community, it's played a really big impact. I think creativity for me, because I think not many people know this, because I think they just see what I did for my uni project, but actually that was like going into my parents' history and like their personal experiences about the war and everything they dealt with and went through, that was something I actually did in school. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really speak massively about it, because that it was around that time that I made a really, really big difference for me. And I like, for me, art was my way of figuring out where I stood with it, and also just learning about it. Because I would say it's a tough conversation, but it's more than just a tough conversation. We're speaking about people dying, but in a way where, like, obviously they're literally being killed, and it's quite intense, and it's a lot, and it's a lot to unpack, and also just to speak to them and, like, you know, remind them of those experiences, because it's not like that's something that's really easy to forget. I think it was something I was always quite nervous to do, because I remember I'd ask questions when I was like a little kid and stuff, and my parents are just going to be honest, they're not people who are going to like hide things or anything like that, especially if I've got a question about something like this. They're going to be transparent with me, and I think I remember like it just being like, oh wow, that was quite a lot, and it put me off at wanting to ask any questions I had. And the reason why I think being an artist and being creative is so important to me, because I use that as my way of building up the courage to ask those questions, but also kind of express myself to see how I felt about it, because I don't have a direct experience with that. Like, I'm very blessed to be able to say that, but there's a lot that I realize, I know that in a really messed up way, that I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the war. Like, my parents immigrated here to escape it, and for that reason, and that's where they met here in like in the UK. And if the war didn't happen, I might not exist. Like, life could be so different, and there's a lot to that. There's, because it's really strange to be like almost like, wow, like I kind of exist because a war happened. But it's also a bit like, which is like a lot to that if you really think about it. And I think there's so many Tamil kids who could say the very similar things in that way. And I think that's why it's so important to acknowledge the history of it and speak about it, because I think we have such different perspectives, but also in the same vein, it's awful what happened. A lot of the Tamil community couldn't really go back home. Like, my, because it was so dangerous, my parents didn't really get to go back home or say, like, when their parents passed away, it was around that time, but it was too dangerous to go. And so much of that is, and I think that's why I think exploring that and speaking about it is so important to me, because it's not a normal, it's far from a normal experience, but I think it's just the fact that it's a very big experience and a big, there's a lot of history to it, and it's not really spoken enough about, and it's acknowledged. And I think there's a lot of people that I speak to who have no idea that it's even happened. And this, I think for me, why it's so frustrating is because it's not like it was something that was like 100 years ago. This was literally like it's still even somewhat ongoing as well for some extent, actually. And the war properly ended in 2009, but I think it's still very ongoing in terms of the way how Tamil people are treated that like back home. But, and that's why I found it so frustrating, and why it's not spoken enough about, when it's actually quite recent. And there's people out here, kids out here, who will remember it, like, kind of being announced that it's going to end, and they've come, they're going to end it, and all those kind of things.
Absolutely. And I think something that you mentioned in terms of your parents coming here, but what they had to give up to come here, but also their memories of the beauty of Sri Lanka and the culture and music and food and all of the different aspects that create Tamil or Sri Lankan culture, that beauty exists with that trauma. And I think to kind of represent all of that in an artistic perspective is really difficult, but that's also real. And that messiness is kind of what makes the perspective so unique equally.
Yeah, because I think even with that, there's a lot to that. Like, I think for a really good long time, I think me and my, I don't know about my sister, but I think for me especially, like, I just wasn't really interested in going. I think hearing what my parents have said, like, why would I want to go there? It just seems like everyone talks about Sri Lanka being this beautiful island, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just like, I don't think you know the true history and what the Tamil community have experienced. And that's what I found very, like, it's almost a bit ignorant. And, like I get it, because you're not going to sit there and research, what is it? Like, when you go abroad somewhere, you're never going to sit there and research the complete history and break it down, are you, really? But also, it's just, when you speak to someone, and it just feels a bit frustrating, because I have such a different perspective on it. I think it's only really in the last few years I've been curious about wanting to go and see it and see my parents' home and things like that. But for a long time, I was like, why would I want to see this? I feel like I'm not going to see what my family grew up with. I'm going to see something different and broken and destroyed and... And I'm not going to say that's completely changed. I think there's still like there's still things that need to be done mm-hmm. for it to even get back to where it was before the war.
Mm.
But I, how that's why I'm like, I always felt hesitant mm. about wanting to go. But now it's actually like, I want to go because it's such an important part of our history. And there's so much there that I want to learn. And there's so much I would want to do and be involved in. Especially like, I know there's a couple of people I know who've gone back home and like built up homes and tried to do everything they can to acknowledge it through the work that they're doing. And I feel like it would just make sense. And I would just want to find, I want to find the right time to do it that as well.
So have you not visited Sri Lanka before?
No, okay. I actually haven't.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this potentially could
it's more something I'm interested in, but I'm kind of glad that I waited because I think I'd rather go with a better mindset. I think it's something, because like for some people, I think going back home is like, oh, like, we're going to see family. But I think for us, like, I don't know, it's a big deal because we're going at a time, like some people who go back home, I think they still have their grandparents and this and that. For us, it's a bit different.
Mm.
And, you know, I think I'm glad that I waited because I think there's a lot that I want to do, would want to do around, especially like maybe even a project, because I feel like that's a different way. Like, that's, I feel like a great way to really speak about the history.
I also had another question. I have some Sri Lankan friends myself from university, and would you see yourself as Sri Lankan, or do you think that is in some way more of an association with the state of Sri Lanka and you yourself are more Tamil? What are your perspectives on that?
I would consider myself more Tamil. Yeah. Hand on heart, I consider myself more self Tamil, if anything. And if anything, I would say I'm Eland Tamil, which is what they call themselves back home. How do I explain this? For me, like, why would I identify with a country that tried to, like, you know what I mean? Like, if they try to eradicate Tamil identity, I don't personally. And they're like, it's because they're trying to get rid of the Tamil community, right? And Tamil being the strongest part they're trying to get rid of, I would identify with that more purely because I feel like that's the thing that I want. Like, I'm trying to, like, oppose against them trying to destroy it, right? And I feel like acknowledging the Sri Lankan part, which I don't completely identify with personally. Doesn't make sense.
There's obviously a huge Tamil Sri Lankan community in London, and there is kind of so much vibrancy in that community. So do you feel some sense of community beyond kind of just your photography, but just kind of day-to-day life? Do you have kind of areas of London that you go to where you're like, this is my Tamil home, places that you go to?
100%. Like, I have loads of, like, family and friends and all sorts. And also, like, there are, like, loads of events and things that are coming about now, which is amazing. And there's loads of platforms as well. And I'm seeing more and more of that, which is really incredible because you're, like, able to connect with more and more people within the community. And especially you're starting to see more and more creatives as well. And there's all sorts of things coming out. There's things like Jamspot. I don't know if you've seen it about all Tamil around and, like, highlights Tamil, like, musicians and everything, which is incredible. And there's also Tamari, which is literally a platform for highlighting. It started off as, I think, music, but I think now it's gone beyond that. And it's literally highlighting Tamil people who own restaurants, who I think starred in certain movies, people who are like football players
people
and everything.
People who
and
won MasterChef as well.
Honestly, I was so gassed. Like, I really feel really. I never thought that would happen, though. And I think the thing is, I think his name's Brim. I don't know him personally. I'm sure he must realize that, like, it's quite a big deal because I think I used to watch that show growing up. And I'm like, never mind, I don't think a Tamil person would win it. And you know, recently, even today, I saw Tamari post about the fact that, like, there's now going to be this new show on, I think it's like a kids show. I think it's with, have you seen it?
On CBeebies,
But it's going to be about a hybrid family that's Tamil, but British. But the fact that they're calling themselves Tamil, that's crazy to me.
They have characters that are like Amma, Appa, which is mum and dad in Tamil.
Amma, mum, and all that stuff. And I was it's amazing. Why that's such a big deal is because I'm like, growing up, like, there were shows I was into, of course, but there's nothing I could completely relate to. And, like, it is exciting. When you hear, like, I remember, like, recently I worked on a project, actually, with Tai Thirachandran for doing some set design bits for Condé Nast and Condé Nast Traveller and Cartier. And there were snippets of that video where she spoke Tamil. And so many people were so excited. And I was like, I completely get it. Because you never would think a platform like that or a publication like that would do something like this where they highlight the Tamil community, and it's something that Tamil people can relate to, and that things like that are so exciting to see. So then seeing, even though it's a kid's show, probably never going to watch it because it's a kid's show, but like seeing that, it's amazing because then like there's going to be younger kids who are actually going to grow up with something they can understand, not the way that we did. And I think this is where it's so important.
That's so true. And I think it makes you feel a lot more that in any space that you want to be in, there is someone in some way that you can see yourself in. And there are moments where you kind of think, well, it's just a cartoon, you know, like it might seem superficial, but those are the sort of things that spark interest. Like I still think of the kids shows that I used to watch. I talk about this all the time, but Anjali Mahindra, I want her on this podcast. She played Rani in Sarah Jane Adventures, and I used to love that show.
That one was so exciting to me because I'm like, oh my God, she's brown. That was amazing. How people could act. That's crazy. And especially because I think at that stage, it was a show that you like, I think at the age we're at, it's a show that we're really interested in. But she was it's an age. It's like, there's connections in that sense. And it, because it's obviously easier to relate to someone who's closer to you in age than someone older or like your parents' age. But it does mean something.
Absolutely. And do you have any kind of moments growing up in pop culture media where you like my Rani Chandra moment, like someone who you saw and you thought that could be me, or that's me on the TV?
This is what I mean though. I think for me personally, a lot of the shows that I was watching at the time didn't really have that. Upset from I completely forgot about was it Sarah Jane Adventures?
I used to love that.
I think besides that, I can't remember anyone where it would actually no. There was Emily High.
About
that.
I used to love her.
Her name.
She was called Rose. Like,
oh my gosh, she's a spy. That's so cool. But I think besides that, I actually can't think of anything from the top of my head. Especially someone who was in a main character role, because I feel like an Emily High. It's really bad. I don't know her name.
I think it's Rose. Just for benefit of the tape.
I don't know the actress's name.
Oh, yes, good point.
The person who played Rose.
I'll stick it in description.
It was. I think it's amazing because she played quite a lead role. She was in a series. She played quite a lead role.
Yeah.
And how many shows like that existed? It was the same with Rani. How many, like, she played quite a significant lead role for a period of time.
Yeah.
And I think growing up, I feel like that was almost a rarity. What was her name? Tracy Beaker. Iconic. Oh my God. You know how to crap. You must.
Which one?
Elaine the Pain. Oh, even though, like, I think her character was seen in a type of way or whatnot, it was still kind of amazing. I think, but even in that, like, I think she was the only South Asian in that track. Who played like a significant role. Just three, like three versus people, like white people got, like, do you know what I mean? But I think we're starting to see, it's nice to see that we're seeing more and more of a change within industry. I think it's a slow change and it's getting there, but I think it's so important because it is exciting to be able to list and be like, oh, like it was so cool to see someone I could actually relate to in a show.
And I think as much as it's the industry changing, I also think it's people's mindsets towards where they can be in society. You don't just have to keep your head down and get on with kind of your normal job 9 to 5. You can pursue a passion and you can see yourself pursuing a passion and making that a living. And I think that's something that I kind of want to understand more in terms of how your cultural identity can be something really important, but that can also shape creativity that can be something that makes money or can be something that is something you do all the time. It's not just something you have to have separately.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think there's a lot of layers to that. And like, even within my own journey, I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it and say it's been easy. It hasn't. I think I've been in some environments where literally was told that if I made projects, by a white person, that if I made projects about my family history, bearing in mind I want to speak about the war, that it wouldn't be interesting. And I remember finding it really ironic because I remember her speaking to another student and they wanted to do a project about the World War. I think World War One or World War Two. And like, I'm not saying that that person's project isn't justified because I think she had like grandparents who'd gone through it and whatnot. And that is absolutely fair enough. That is a valid experience to share. But for me, why I found that frustrating is those wars are so spoken, like they're spoken about so much in history lessons and all sorts. I'm trying to speak about something firstly, that didn't end like almost like 100 years ago or whatever. Mm. Like this end, like it's like ongoing recently, very end, like kind of ended recently, but still somewhat ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that it wouldn't be interesting. And I personally didn't even bother to understand or unpack my experiences or understand why it was so important.
Mm.
So as much as they would say, like, I like breaking into industries, being this, that, there's also been some negativity around it. And it did make me feel a type of way, actually. It almost made me feel like, should I really be, is going into my culture not interesting? Am I not interesting as a person? Mm. And like, it, especially because I was like 18 at that age. I was like 17, 18. And that's such a young, impressionable age mm-hmm. to be hearing such. But in the same vein, I was like, when I actually then, the math thing is, I then tried to branch out and do different projects and I could see that I was not happy within it. The work reflected it. Like the work was not even great. Oh, I could say so many words. It was just not, it wasn't good. It wasn't something I was even proud of. And I couldn't even bring that energy into like my first year of uni. And I wasn't creating work that I was proud of. And I was like, do you know what? Screw it. I think I need to forget those things that have stuck with me or I've been told. Because I think deep down, I know what kind of projects I want to make. And when I started making them, I thrived.
Mm, absolutely.
And one of the biggest things I've learned about creative, and I would tell other people, is literally, like, no matter what anyone says to you, pursue the things that you're genuinely passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel there's some of the people I've spoken to who aren't even in the creative industry and are different industries who would even say, like, pursue what you're actually passionate about. Because when you do that, and, like, even when it comes to building a project, you're going to put a lot of love into it. You're going to put a lot of passion into it. You're going to put a lot more drive into it.
Mm.
I think I've gone down a different route and I wasn't creating work that I was proud of or happy with. I don't think I'd be in the position I'm in now
mm-hmm.
because of the work that I created. It's pushed me and driven me a lot more to pursue breaking into the industry and doing, still keep creating the work that I'm creating, but also been really fortunate because of that, that I've been a part of some projects mm-hmm. commercially that actually have very similar values and involved around the South Asian community, and I've been paid from it, and like it's possible,
mm-hmm.
it's possible. And I think when I was younger, I didn't think it would be, but I now looking back, I'm very glad to have just been like, screw it, I'm just going to keep doing what I enjoy, mm-hmm. and I will find a way to make money.
Yeah, and that's part of your path as well, and that in itself is unique, and it needs to represent your journey of understanding. And then to kind of pander too much to other people's perspectives or kind of initiatives would not be true to that identity. And I think the cultural identity that you have is so important in how it's inspired your work, that I think to not represent that or to kind of subdue that for the satisfaction of someone else wouldn't be authentic.
It wouldn't be authentic. It's not something I'm happy to do. And it's crazy to think that I was actually, there was a point where I was doing that because I just felt like there was no other way to keep going forward as a creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that I had like this, I remember it was like the summer of like finishing first year. And I was like, why am I failing at this?
Mm.
I was like, I don't know why. I just felt like I was failing at creativity because obviously you're grading it. So, you know, the brown girl in you just, it's so easy to be motivated by grades and things like that, right? So when I then was not doing so well, when I had thrived, and the mad thing is, I remember in A-level, I had that freedom. Like, my teachers literally said to me, pursue this. I think there's a lot that you want to explore with this, but I think personally as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that I think you should do. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to put a lot of love into that project. And I did so well in school because I did put a lot. They were right. I did that and I thrived. And that's why I remember that summer it clicked. I was like, why is it I thrived so much? And the last years I've just not been good at this. Like, I've not enjoyed it. And like, something doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it clicked. And I'm glad I had that click to be like, do you know what? Why am I listening to someone who doesn't even understand me, who can't even relate to me, who is very ignorant of the experiences? And why am I letting that get to me so much?
Mm-hmm.
And like, when people ask me advice about how I perceive this and going in uni, going in certain environments, I always say like, yeah, there's going to be some people. I'm not saying that some critiques aren't useful.
Mm-hmm.
Some are.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some where, like, if you genuinely just feel like, yeah, this is useless, just don't listen to it. take everything you listen to with a pinch of salt. Even today, when I go and have portfolio meetings with agencies and I showcase my book, they will even say to me, some of this might not apply to you, so don't take everything. That's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
But here's some advice. And I pick and choose what I take and I make it work. And then when I then go and send my portfolio to them again, they'll be like, oh, yeah, this looks great.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, yes, you want to take advice from people who've got industry experience, but you also want to be happy with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing.
We might need to do a bonus episode. I might need to put another call in so that we can unpack some more things. But one thing I wanted to ask is, obviously we talked about the Pioneers Project. You also have your Not Just Brown, Not Just Indian project that you did as well. And also I've been seeing you kind of have Thamil foodstuffs, and then you have kind of jewellery, and I don't really know how to, maybe you could do a better job of describing it than I can, but all of these different sort of hints or nods towards your culture and your heritage, but also your completely unique take on it. And what I wanted to ask, like, how did you come up with those ideas? What was it that inspired you to do that? And yeah, just kind of tell us more about those different projects that you've done.
I think when it comes to projects specifically about my culture, mm-hmm. it's very in the moment. It's very much mm-hmm. about like what's happening at home, or if we're celebrating a festival, or mm-hmm. I'm just curious to explain something or curious to share some knowledge. Mm-hmm. I think my biggest thing about sharing these projects is like, yes, it, for me, it's about exploring it, but also it's about education. I realized when I was doing my degree and I was doing a project centered, especially my final year, where I did a project centered about Tamil women. Mm-hmm. And I very much spoke, I think in that project, I spoke about my name mm-hmm. and, you know, you grow up in this country and people say all sorts of things about when you've got a foreign name and how to pronounce it and this and that. And like, I remember like younger, you know, when I was younger, I felt a type of way about the way I was named and the name that I have. And it isn't so easy to pronounce compared to some other, like some other white names. And for me, that, why that was so important, because it was a kind of like a journey of like, I like understand the history of how I was named and everything. I'm like, actually, there's so much thought that is put into, like, it varies from culture to culture, mm-hmm. but like the way I was named is based on numerology, astrology. Mm-hmm. Like, it took a month to name me. There was thought and energy and love put into that. Do you know what mm-hmm, I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, it was the same with my sister, and they named it. They named us in a way where like our meanings quite like work really nicely.
Yeah.
Like, her name is Tashanti, and she, hers means like to bring peace, and mine is Mother Show, which means to make people happy. And I mm-hmm. think things like that. And I'm like, how many people, no offense to the white community, can say that they have been named in such a thought out way like that? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And it's quite great for me, like doing projects like this just helped me appreciate more and more of my culture, mm-hmm. but also then it starts to become a thing of like actually educating other people about something they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much in the moment with a lot of those projects, except for Not Just Brown, Not Just Indian.
Mm-hmm.
With that, something I wanted to do my final year, mm-hmm. couldn't, because I was studying during COVID, so I did my entire year from home. And the nature, but I'm kind of in a weird way, I'm kind of glad it worked out that way, because mm-hmm. during my time at home, I built the project, my final year project, with my mum, mm-hmm. and that was like a whole unique experience that was really memorable to me and really valuable to me mm-hmm. in so many different ways. But also when I built the Not Just Man, Not Just Indian project, I built it around the time where I was really fortunate to win some funding for it. Mm. So that's what meant that I was able to create it and book out studios and whatnot. But also at this point, I had a bit of industry experience. So I knew mm-hmm. how to build a shoot properly mm. and navigate that properly, because at this point, I had never done such a full-blown production in that way and worked with like teams of up to like 5 to 8 people, mm. whereas a lot of these shoots before were a lot smaller mm-hmm. and simpler.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad it worked out that way, but also I had a lot more knowledge in terms of what I'm doing and like pitching it and putting it forward, because my biggest thing with this project was to get it seen and get it heard and get the experience, because a lot of that was built in everyone's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Except from like Sharanka Tamil Ilam, like all the other ones were built on everyone's individual experiences. My biggest thing was making this authentic, mm. really, really authentic as possible. And especially because there's so much about that out there, people just taking photos of our culture without completely understanding the lived, completely acknowledging the lived experience of those within those photos.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing with this project was I want to build it on authenticity, on people's lived experiences. So a lot of the concepts, mm-hmm. except from one, were built on people sharing what they had gone through, what they had grown up with,
mm-hmm.
what was something that they really wanted to speak about. And mm-hmm. then we went from there.
That's amazing. And also I wanted to quickly say as well, you were featured on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list for creative. Was it creatives in Europe? Oh, I wasn't sure what the...
It was the arts and cultures list
arts
for
and
Europe.
Cultures. That, which is amazing. Congratulations on that. And also, obviously, you've done so many collaborations with all these different brands and things. And this is my final question, really, and it's the question that I'm going to be asking every guest in the podcast. And it is, do you think of yourself as a dreamer? And the perspective that I'm coming from with this question is that I think often we get told not to daydream and not to get distracted and to concentrate and to kind of get on with our goals and think. And I think sometimes there's maybe a necessity to dream or fantasize about a reality that seems quite far off or seems like something that someone like us might not necessarily achieve. And then eventually you break those boundaries, you be a trailblazer, but that started off in some way as a dream or a fantasy. Do you relate to that in any way?
100%. Oh yeah. My God, yeah. I mean, like, yeah, like, I'm not going to sit and say, like, my parents are, like, I love my parents and all, but, like, mm-hmm. and they have been, I've been really fortunate in terms of the way they've been about me pursuing something creative mm-hmm. in terms of just actually going forward with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in the same vein, and I get it from their perspective, especially now that I've gotten older. For us, like, both me and my sister, all they wanted us to have was financial stability, mm-hmm. but they also gave us room to pursue what we wanted to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
But in saying that, they did try and push me to do maths because I did maths at A level.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit and deny that. Like, they tried their best to get us to pursue something academic. And from their perspective, not that I'm defending it, I get why, it's all they were taught.
Mm.
So in that sense, I would call myself a dreamer because I went beyond what we're all taught in the community and things like that, and what we're taught to believe is the right way to do this and to do that and to build a financially stable future and just a secure future. And at the end of the day, I think when I would say, yeah, definitely I'm a dreamer, actually, because I think when I pursued this, I had no idea how I was going to make this into a career. Like, I think I remember even like after A levels and when it came to uni, I was like, at that time I was doing a lot of fine art sculpt work, like that kind of thing, and like painting, and I was like, I enjoy this, but I don't see myself pursuing this as a career. But I was like, I'm gonna be a creative though, like one way or another, I'm gonna do it. I want to do it. I want to make it into a job. And I think that was like a really big dream for me. I remember, like, I think I had like a list of goals, and one of them was to have a successful creative career.
Oh,
and
wow.
I remember calling it a creative career. And this was like back in school because I didn't know how that was going to look.
That's amazing.
And I'm really happy to be able to say that I somewhat have achieved that, and I'm achieving that.
Absolutely.
So I would say it's a mix of both, because I think with that, it's, to get to this stage, it's taken drive and, like, you know, the way, like, at the end of the day, I feel like South Asians, especially by their parents, they're, you know, driven to be so, like, driven. They're, like, you know, made to be so driven and pursue what they want to get to and, like, reach the goals and reach that, you know, tick off certain stages of their lives that I would say a little bit of that energy has helped, you know, having that energy has made me, you know, pursue this further for sure.
I agree because I think there's an aspect of work ethic that becomes part of the culture, but you can still, it's not aimless dreaming, it is very focused dreaming.
That's what I say, is maybe it's more focused dreaming instead of saying I come and dream of, like, I don't know, like, it's still in the up in the air. It's more like it's a focused dream. It's like it's a dream, yes, to pursue this, but it's actually like there's steps and stages I'm going to take to actually achieve it and make sure it becomes a reality.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you so much for your time. It's been so great to chat to you and understand your perspectives on how your culture has influenced your work and also different obstacles that you faced and just kind of understanding your heritage more. I just wanted to ask, are there any other inspirational Desi dreamers, South Asian dreamers that you wanted to give a shout out to? Anyone else I should interview? We talked about Aarti Nachapan actually before the interview started, and she's one of my family friends, and Madhu on her Pioneers project obviously worked with her as well, which I will again show you guys. But yeah, so Aarti Nachapan definitely on my list. Anyone else?
I really recently worked with her, but I have so much respect for her actually, because I've seen her grow in so many different ways. Would be Tamika Mary, who's a model and a beauty content creator. But also, I think not a lot of people know this, but, like, and I hope she's cool with me sharing. I think I'm sure she would be. But she's actually a producer. Like, she's worked in industry and she's used shoots. And I know for a fact, if I hired her, I think she'd know what to do, which is crazy. But I think not a lot of people know that. And I think she's such a, and the way she's grown and got into the stage that she's at and is, like, now a full-time content creator is incredible because there's so many layers to her and she does so many multiple different things. And I think that in itself is amazing, mm-hmm. because she managed all that whilst being 9 to 5 for a period of time and then got it to a stage where it's going really well to then continue with it.
Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing.
And I think, yeah, like from her perspective, I think she's got such an interesting story as a freelancer because she can understand like the other side of, at the end of the day, when it comes to bringing in a content creator for content and this and that, there's a bit of production to it, and she can understand how that works, which I think is so valuable, because she can understand rights and all these kind of things. Another person would be, I think because we spoke about her early, would be Anisha Palmer. Yeah. And the reason I actually know Anisha Palmer is because back in uni, when I realized, I think I need to get experience, I need to build up my experience in terms of the creative industry to be able to go and apply for jobs and all sorts of things. Anisha Palmer was one of the people I actually interned for.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Connections.
It's like a small world because I've known her. Like, I always say I've known her for a while, but I'm like, she was like there when I was really starting out my career and has seen me, and I've seen her grow as well. Mm-hmm. And I would say that a lot of the work that she's doing is amazing. The way I think from when I first knew her to now, because mm-hmm. she's sent me so many different creative projects as well. Because mm-hmm. I think she was doing a lot, like it was of course very jewelry focused, and it still is, but now it's expanded in so many different ways. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. she's homeware and building loads of projects and producing things with loads of galleries and things, especially in Derby where she's based. And I think so much growth there. And this has only really been in the last few years, I would say.
Yeah, a lot of this work, even Aarti's DJ work as well, it's very post-pandemic exponential rise. I think there was a real change in the cultural fabric.
Yeah, no, 100%. I feel like it's because, you know, you work 9 to 5, and then when you're constantly from home, like I feel like during COVID, I had so much time.
Yeah, same.
I did my final year, but I did like 3 different internships to build experience. I did them like 1 day a week. Mm-hmm. But like I made it work and I was never tired because I'm like, I just felt like you had so much time. Because when you're just at home, it makes you realise, damn, I actually go out so much.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much time dedicated just to traveling to places and going out to these things that I think loads of people probably thought that way and then decided to explore so many different things on the side. And it's nice, it's amazing to see how much it's grown since.
Mm-hmm. I think even for me with kind of podcasting, I listened to podcasts before lockdown, but then something in lockdown, you latched onto things I think that gave you comfort, and I was listening to every single culture podcast, society podcast, comedy podcast, and it became obsessive to one point. But it did get to the point where I thought I loved listening to the radio when I was growing up, and then I've kind of moved into enjoying podcasting and audio. There was nothing stopping me from in uni when me and my friend Saskia, shout out, we started a current affairs podcast because I studied politics, and now kind of transitioning that into seeing and representing my culture and trying to talk to these different creatives in the South Asian cultural diaspora in London and maybe beyond that as well. Just being able to kind of tap into that with a medium that I grew to love during lockdown is a really nice way of sort of bringing together all those different threads and trying to like create something new. I totally
agree.
It's
a balance of things you're interested in.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And just before we finish, do you want to plug any social media work you have coming up?
Oh, I do. I have loads of exciting projects, some exciting client work, as well as a mix of like personal projects that I'm building. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm allowed to reveal too much just yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay, fair enough.
But yes, please do keep an eye on my socials. My socials are at MadhuXPhotos.
Nice.
It's that everything.
Okay, perfect, perfect.
That's my consistency.
Perfect. Okay, thank you so much, Madhuja Saktidas, for joining me on Desi Dreamers.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed learning about Madhu's unique artistic vision and her journey as a South Asian photographer. So we talked about Aarti Nachipan, who is a DJ, a journalist at Sky News, and also a dancer. Is there anything that she can't do? We mentioned Anisha Palmer, who is a jewellery designer. And we also mentioned Tabitha Mary, who is a model and also content creator. So those are a couple of the other dreamers that potentially I'll be talking to throughout the series, and also just very inspiring people for both myself and Madhuja. Thank you so much for listening to Desi Dreamers. I hope this story was a powerful reminder of the incredible resilience, creativity, and determination that defines the South Asian diaspora. We've taken a journey which has explored the cultural influences, personal challenges, and transformative moments that have shaped a unique narrative. Each episode of Desi Dreamers is a testament to the fact that our stories matter. That representation isn't just about seeing ourselves reflected, but about understanding the complex, beautiful journeys that bring us to our most authentic selves. Importantly, our cultural heritage is not a limitation, but our greatest source of strength. Desi Dreamers is powered by Transmission Roundhouse and is available on all major podcast platforms. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you love today's story, please leave a review and share it with anyone who needs to hear about these incredible journeys. Next time, I'll be diving into another incredible story that proves our dreams have no boundaries. Until then, keep dreaming, keep believing, and most importantly, keep being unapologetically you. I'm Nikita Nachipan, and this has been Desi Dreamers.